third case this morning, N. Ray Lavros Kubitis. Mr. Desmond.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Michael Desmond. I represent the appellant, Lavros Kubitis. Mr. Kubitis appeals from the entry of a default judgment entered by the Bankruptcy Court denying his discharge in bankruptcy pursuant to 11 U.S.C. 727A6 for failing to comply with a court order. On appeal from the Bankruptcy Court to the District Court correctly found that Ms. Bowman, the plaintiff in this matter, failed to properly serve Mr. Kubitis as required by Federal Rule 5A2. Ms. Bowman's failure to execute or serve a fresh summons upon Mr. Kubitis in connection with her second amended complaint rendered the default judgment void as a matter of law. However, the District Court held that Kubitis waived any challenge to personal jurisdiction in the Bankruptcy Court by failing to challenge the sufficiency of service of process in his motion to vacate the default judgment pursuant to Rules 59 and 60.
Did he object to the lack of service and the lack of personal jurisdiction when he first had the opportunity to do so in the bankruptcy court?
He did not, Your Honor, and that would have been in connection with his motion to vacate. When the default judgment was entered under Bankruptcy Rule 8002, the appeal period is 14 days. The time to bring a Rule 59 or Rule 60 motion would have been within the appeal period. He did not raise a challenge to the deficiency of service at that time. Our position is that since the plaintiff in this case did not and was unable to establish a prima facie case of service, that the burden never actually shifted to Mr. Kubitis to raise that challenge. The jurisdictional challenges brought initially on a Rule 60 motion are treated as the functional equivalent of a Rule 12B, sections 12B, maybe 2 through 5.
But
excluding.
Here's the problem, the way I see it, I don't know. He filed motions under the bankruptcy court equivalent of Rule 59E and Rule 60B1 challenging the default judgment, but he didn't in those motions challenge personal jurisdiction or claim that he had not been properly served. So, I mean, if a party intends to challenge personal jurisdiction due to faulty service of process, a party has to object in the first responsive pleading or forever waive the objection to personal jurisdiction. And
Judge,
our hands, I think, are tied.
Well, if the court looks at the decisions where it's applied the forfeiture rule, the O'Brien versus R.J. O'Brien and Swaim versus Moulton, there's a whole series of decisions, Homer versus Jones-Bray, Mid-Continent, Matter of State Exchange Finance Company. In each of those cases, there was a summons issued, and there was service. There was, at a minimum, a prima facie showing that service had been obtained.
So are you saying that the bankruptcy court has an obligation to review the record to ensure proper service before ordering a default?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think in the first instance, the court has to determine whether service has been made. And the burden is on the plaintiff at that point in time to make a prima facie showing.
Well, why shouldn't we rely on the parties to come to court and assert affirmative defenses?
Well, if there's no service, and I think everyone would agree.
Well, here in this instance, it would be that the default judgment, once he got notice of the default judgment, why shouldn't he just come in and assert it if the court missed that?
Correct. I think we all agree that if there is no service, no summons, there's no obligation under 12B to on a defendant to come in and raise any issue.
Right.
Here, the motion for default is filed. In order for that default to be properly entered, there has to be a determination, at least a facial determination, whether there was process and service. The Supreme Court has long held where there's been no process or no service, the proceedings are nullity. The judgment is void ab initio. Here, the plaintiff has to make a prima facie showing in order to obtain that default judgment that there has been process and there has been service. Now, there may be defects in the service. In this case, there was no summons issued. Federal Rule 5A2 requires when a new claim is asserted and you have a defendant who is in default for failing to otherwise appear, when a new claim is asserted on a new factual predicate, a new summons must issue. That didn't happen in this case. No new summons was issued. There is no service of a new summons upon the defendant. Therefore, my position is the judgment was void ab initio. It's a nullity. Where there is no process and no service, the court simply has no jurisdiction. And the burden doesn't shift to the defendant until that prima facie showing is made. If, in fact, the summons had been issued in this case, I don't think I could be standing before this court making this argument. Here there was no summons. So there was nothing for the defendant to challenge because no service had been made.
Yeah, but once the defendant came to court, he was aware of it. There was a mistake made by the bankruptcy court, and he should have raised it.
Well,
because otherwise, you know, waiver, you would throw waiver out the window.
I think in this case, Judge, given the short period of time between the entry of the default, remember, at this point in time, the defendant's not represented by counsel. Default judgment gets entered. He has to go out. He has to find counsel, retain counsel, file a motion, and he has 14 days to do that. Frankly, I don't think they had enough time to determine or review the record in detail to determine whether, in fact, process was sufficient here.
And you're saying that he couldn't have come in for an extension of time. He was, after all, a state court judge, right?
Well, the defendant here could have asked the bankruptcy court to extend the appeal period, which would have extended the time to file such a motion. They didn't do that here. The reality is
because normally if you need additional time to review a file or to check on service or for whatever reason, you can come in and ask for an extension of time. You agree with that? It could have been done.
He could have asked for an extension of time, Your Honor. I can't dispute that. He didn't do it in this case, and I didn't do it because of the short period of time and the appeal period was running. The cases, again, all... This court has addressed this waiver issue really in two cases, the O'Brien case, which the district court relied on, and the Swain case as well. And again, I think all of those cases are distinguishable from this situation. The court in those cases found a waiver because in each of the cases that the defendant came in on a Rule 55, I think in one case, and a Rule 60 motion in the other, and didn't raise the jurisdictional challenge. And those courts all found that it was waived. Again, in each of those cases, you have summons, you have service, at least facially you have service, and there's a prima facie showing. We don't have a prima facie showing here. There is absolutely no service, there is absolutely no summons issued or served. The plaintiff in this case did file something with the bankruptcy court called a certificate of service. Attached to that is a certificate of service. She crossed out the word summons and wrote the word notice in there. That's in the record at 3-2 at page 71, volume 3-2, excuse me. That simply isn't sufficient to establish service of process here. This circuit requires service, strict service, by the letter of the law. Substantial compliance is simply not enough. Absent a a proper summons and proper service, the burden simply didn't shift to the defendant to raise a challenge to jurisdiction. I see that I'm in my rebuttal period, so I'll yield to the
Mr. Bowman? Or Ms. Bowman, sorry.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Gloria Bowman, and I'm here as a pro se litigant. As you know, this appeal stems from a bankruptcy case in which I am a creditor. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to be able to ask you to uphold the district court's decision. We're here because the district court affirmed the bankruptcy court this year, 2013, and the district court did not find clear error regarding the bankruptcy court default orders that were entered in 2012.
Ms. Bowman, are you an attorney?
No, sir.
But you're appearing pro se on your own behalf.
Yes. So my point is that the court has had personal jurisdiction over the debtor since 2010, and that's the thrust of my argument. In 2010, when he filed his original bankruptcy court petition. And the jurisdiction includes all of the associated cases as well out of the core bankruptcy case. It includes the jurisdiction over him, personal jurisdiction and subject matter jurisdiction. So it's an aged time period that the bankruptcy court had had jurisdiction over the appellant. The appellant, the debtor, and he was found in default for, I believe, for two reasons. For not following a court order regarding a turnover of documents, financial documents, regarding a business in which I have an interest. And secondly, I believe he was found in default for the element of noncompliance, for not answering complaints when he was given sufficient notice and when he was asked by the court to do so, to answer the complaints, and also for not appearing in court. The court had given him specific dates to appear, which he did not appear, specific dates to respond by, which he did not respond, and he didn't appear for follow-up court dates. In his vacate motions, he didn't make the argument about service. And the reason he didn't make that argument is because he had physically got it. It was in his possession. And he demonstrated later in court that he had received those. I had started filing my adversary complaints back in 2010. And those were based on that I thought that Mr. Contrubus owed me and my siblings money from a business that we once shared. We are Mr. Contrubus's adult stepchildren. We became interveners in his divorce from my mother. We were given in the divorce decree an award of an accounting of the profits of a business. We were awarded an accounting of that business. It was a pre-petition judgment, a business in which we were part owners. So my lawsuit was filed early in 2010. So jurisdiction over the appellant regarding this matter has long been established. In fact, there were two complaints that were filed way back when it was a Chapter 11. But the appellant's brief only depicts the Chapter 7 filings after it was converted, the more recent filings. So the matter of jurisdiction over the appellant is aged, because the context, or the content rather, of all of those complaints, trying to get an accounting for the business, was all the same. So in my response brief, I had added the entire record to demonstrate this, how long that I've been trying to get an accounting. Were it not for Mr. Katrubis's recalcitrance, if you will, or more accurately, his apathy and his frustrating the court. And I believe that the court had recognized his pattern of not complying and not showing up and not following court orders. In fact, the bankruptcy judge admonished Mr. Katrubis in 2010 that he did not like playing games with service. In 2011, when Mr. Katrubis in open court was saying that he didn't receive the second to last complaint, the judge had to offer even to print it out for him right on the spot. Subsequently then, Mr. Katrubis, he did acknowledge the Chapter 7 second amended complaint. The one that's in question here is whether or not it was properly served. Well, it's common sense that he got it. It was in his possession. And during this litigation, these years of litigation, I've always used first-class mail or priority mail. And in the two initial complaints, the one in Chapter 11 and the one in Chapter 7, I issued summons. So the actual notice and that he physically received it was never a problem, along with a copy of even the new amended, second amended one. Firstly, he was told by the judge when to expect it, when I was given leave to file it. So he obviously got it and read it, and service was never brought up in his vacate motions. And at that time, he was told by the judge when to answer it. He was given a response date of February 10th, and he chose not to respond. He was also at that time given a return date to come back to court of February 14th, and he did not show up for that return date. He was given a notice of a default hearing, and he didn't even show up for that. His vacate motions were only based on excusable neglect. He had an ill mother, and that was only based on not showing up that one day for the default hearing. His vacate motions had nothing to do with on the grounds of lack of jurisdiction or that he had not received the complaint. That's because he had the complaint in his hands, and he had read the complaint, and he knew all about the complaint. He knew all about what was going on in court, and he had full knowledge of the complaint because he never said otherwise. In his vacate motions, it was just excusable neglect for one day, that last day, when he once again didn't come for his default hearing. He had missed multiple court dates through the years, many response dates. As a footnote, he never even showed up for the first appeal in this case. That service was effectuated was not a question. And this was the reason that in my brief, I cited the entire record. It was a new issue that was raised for the very first time on appeal about jurisdiction. And I stand by my brief from the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Much time left. You have 1 minute, counsel.
Thank you. Very quickly. The plaintiff refers to a number of instances in the bankruptcy court where Mr. Katrubis appeared or did not appear. A general appearance in the bankruptcy court or in the bankruptcy case is not an appearance in an adversary proceeding. The adversary rules like the federal rules of civil procedure, apply to adversary proceedings and require service upon the defendant. That didn't happen here. Ms. Bowman refers to the bankruptcy judge setting a date for Mr. Kotrubas to respond. When the plaintiff filed her initial complaint, she came into bankruptcy court and said, you know what, I'm going to amend that complaint. The judge set a date for her to amend the complaint. She did that. She came in again on the amended complaint and said, on second thought, judge, I'm going to seek to file another amended complaint. At that point in time, the judge set a date for her to file an amended complaint, which was in January, and a date for Mr. Kotrubas to respond. There was no determination at that point in time whether Mr. Kotrubas had ever been served with a complaint. He certainly was never served with the amended complaint. And on that basis, we don't believe the bankruptcy court had jurisdiction to enter the default, and the default judgment was void. I see that I'm out of time. On that basis, I would ask the court to reverse the district court and remand this matter to the bankruptcy court for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Ms. Bowman. Case to be taken under advisement, and we move.